You are listening to the People Centric Podcast, where we talk through the toughest challenges that people face at work and give practical advice to fixing those challenges. Thanks for joining our movement to create workplaces that are happier, healthier, aligned, and empowered by putting people at the center of all that we do.
Hey, people-centric leaders. We are really, really excited about this episode because this is Don and Matt and Diana are all together. And so just to be really transparent, we debrief with each other to make sure we're on the same page as we jump into a podcast. And let me show you a little bit about a dynamic on our team. Matt, are we on the same page about this one?
Absolutely. And for the things that we have yet to figure out, we'll figure them out as we go, right?
We're gonna crush this.
Organic conversation. We're going to be in the end of this. But we both get the premise here. And I say both because that's two out of three of us, I think. Diana, I don't know where you land on this.
I mean, do you think I don't understand? Because I get it. I'm just worried about the direction. Fully understand what's happening here.
Yeah, you feel confident in the jumping off point. It's the landing. So stick around, everybody. If we haven't sold it yet, this is what you're going to want to be here for.
Oh, I'm worried.
Stick around. Yeah. So buckle up. This is going to be good. This is going to be really good. But the topic today is meeting people where they are. Now, everybody's heard that comment. It kind of becomes a little bit cliche, but I'm going to share a little bit of a story, and it's going to go back. And I think a lot of you in business can relate to this. I'm going to go back to March of 2020. I don't know what you were doing in mid-March of 2020, but I know the second week of March, our team was on Times Square. I think Matt and Bethany, right, were in the middle of Times Square.
They rode the subway. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't like we were looking at the subway poles. That's the guy that we were with. That's what he said. Shout out to Tom. We loved it. We were right there with 10,000 of our closest friends on Times Square. And then we came back and did an event, Don, in Springfield. I went on a spring break trip. Like that's what we were doing before the moment.
We were showing pictures on that Friday of you guys in Times Square with the rest of the room. And then the following week I think it was on the Tuesday, everything shut down, like shut down, shut it down. We're done. And by the end of that week, being really transparent, we had lost about 30% of our revenue. Like we had clients calling us. I remember talking to one client and called them and said, Hey, just checking in, seeing if you're okay. What's going on? And they said, well, yeah, we just laid off most of our team because we can't do anything. And so we're probably going to have to pause our work with you guys too, because there's no people consult with. Right. So, I mean, that was happening a lot.
And that's scary. Like Tuesday to Friday, we lost 30% of our clients.
Yeah. A week before that, we're in Times Square, like going to visit clients out on the East Coast and traveling all over the place, doing an event in Springfield that we had a whole bunch of people at, and like all the energy, everybody's really excited. Da, 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 da. And then boom, a week and a half later, we're suddenly all in our rooms, right? All in our quarantined spaces, jumping onto Teams and Zoom calls with each other, trying to figure out, okay, what do we do now? What do we do now? Suddenly we've got time. We're canceling trips left and right. What does that look like? So me, as a leader in our company, I had to take a moment. And I will be very honest, like behind the scenes, what was I doing? Not panicking, but not loving life either. Like I wasn't like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I can't believe this. We're going to get through this. This is going to be great. I was looking at it going, we just lost 30% of our revenue.
I was panicking, for the record. I was behind the scenes. I don't know that I showed it, but I was. Yeah.
Diana's version of panicking is to read legislation and stuff though. So you were like, you were way out ahead of like the PPP and all that stuff. Like Diana was like, okay, there's probably going to pass and here's the information we're going to need and I'm going to be ready and I'm going to hit the button. And you were all over that, right?
Preparedness calms my anxiety. That's all that was.
Preparedness calms your anxiety. I love it.
That's another podcast. It's a whole other podcast.
That could be.
Preparedness calms my anxiety.
Preparedness calms anxiety.
Part one.
Now, Matt, you were a little more laid back about the whole thing, right? Yeah, not to speak for you, but you seem to be have your stuff together here through that. What,
you know what? My favorite part about that was everybody was in the office at that time, but I was going to be able to go work from home for at that time, what, a couple of weeks till we kind of did everything settle down, right? Like I'm going to get some home time with the with the kids. It's going to be great. It's going to be
you
great.
Left the house since, right?
Yeah, and I'm still here from the home office, from the home base here too. So life was crazy at that point, but everything was kind of in the unknown too. Preparedness, calms, and the anxiety for Diana. It's funny, you know, everybody can play Monday morning quarterback about that whole time now, but it was day to day. If you guys remember, it was totally day to day. And especially, you know, we have a lot of folks in healthcare, going, I don't know what the rules are going to be for tomorrow, so I don't know how to prepare for tomorrow until I know what the new standard is, and everything was kind of up in air. It really kind of took everybody's mentality, from what they had known to what this new normal is going to look like, and kind of put us in a state of frenzy, which I think is kind of leading us to what we're about to talk about now.
Yeah. So the moment that I'm trying to take everybody to is that me as a leader trying to connect with our team about what are we going to do next. Now, behind the scenes, again, Diana and I had a couple meetings where we laid it out and said, like, let's do some scenarios here. Like, what's the worst case scenario? What's the best case scenario? What's it look like for the rest of the year? We don't know how long we're going to be out. We don't know if those clients are going to come back. We don't know if we're going to lose another 30% the week after. And I remember us running, like, we ran, I think, three different, like, big picture scenarios. It was like a good scenario, an okay scenario, and a bad scenario. And the bad scenario was bad. It was really bad. Like, it was bad, bad. And then the middle scenario wasn't good either. Like, we were like, okay, we have to cut some expenses. Like, we have to think of some stuff. Like, what can we do now that can still give us choices in the future? And then, like, the great scenario was like, okay, like, it was like we start to approach what we thought the year was going to look like that kind of a thing. But it was bleak a little bit. Like, those early discussions were scary. Would you agree with that, Diana?
Yeah. I think it was. You and I, because you're an engineer and I'm just a general pessimist, we went hard on the like worst case scenario. And it was the worst case scenario for sure. Yeah.
It was
I would just like to know what the order was. Like, how far down the line was I to be fired? Can you guys reveal that now? We've never actually talked about that.
Yeah. But... Can't say, but if you know me.
Now or then. You want to know now or then?
Right. The order might not have changed. Might still be wherever I was there. We never talked about it. I don't know if that's another podcast or not. But
well, obviously things turned out okay because Matt's still on our team.
So it was the okay scenario. It wasn't the great one. The okay one.
We call him Matt the Canary Griswold, because if he goes down, you know that we've got everybody else out of the cave. It's really
this is great. This is my favorite podcast yet.
So I remember sitting in my office and I sat down and I actually wrote down, I still actually have the post-it note under my monitor. And it was I've got all these leadership books behind my desk. And I was just sitting there kind of thinking like, oh my gosh, what do we got? What do we have to do? How do we present this to the team? What do we think about going forward? Neither one of you have ever heard me talk about this, by the way. So this is revealed to everybody here. And I turned around, I started scanning like the books that I have, like looking for some inspiration. Like, what do we say? What's the next thing out here? And then I got to the strengths-based leadership book from Gallup, and it talked about like, what do followers need? Which we've done that. We actually did an episode on each of those things, and they need trust, compassion, stability, and hope in those different areas. And so I thought, okay, they need trust, they need compassion, we need stability, we need hope. And so I was about to jump into a meeting with everybody and just be like, everybody, we're fine. We're going to get through this. We're going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. Like, let's get through. We're going to be just great. And I thought about that, but then I thought, no. Trust is in there.
Well, and
you guys have to be able to trust me.
Face just can't lie, you know? So if you had said those things, I'd have been like,
yeah, you'd be like,
you know, Don.
Yeah. Diana's in there going, yeah, it's going to be fine. We're going to be just fine. We're fine. We're fine, everybody. We're fine.
Fine.
Yeah. But we weren't fine. Like, it wasn't okay. So what occurred to me is this idea of like, we have to meet leaders. We have to meet our people where they are. Like, you have to meet people where they are. So my thought was like, where is everybody right now? Like, what does that really look like? And I made calls to everybody individually. And my question was like, first of all, are you okay? Do you have what you need right now? Do you have a space? Do you have the equipment you need? I remember, Matt, I think like you said, like, hey, it would be really nice if we had like, if I had a wireless keyboard, because at the time you had your laptop like up on a stand or something like that. And I'm like, hey, we've got one at the office. I'll go find it and dig it up to you and I'll get it to you. And we got your wireless keyboard. And I remember you responding like, man, this is great. This is a lot easier in my office to be able to use this. It doesn't take
I'm pretty
a lot.
Easy, guys. I'm pretty doesn't, easy.
You just I'm give Matt a cookie every once in a while. He's good. A cookie and a bourbon. He's fine. And talking with Bethany and having the kids around at home and stuff like that, I'm like, do you have a quiet place to go? And what does that look like? And all of that. And talking to Diana about where she was at and her house and stuff. And I think we just had several conversations like that and just met with everybody and started there. And then when we had our team discussion, I just laid it out. Like I said, look, nobody, we didn't choose this. We had a great plan for this year. We were expecting to have the best year ever in our history that year. It didn't turn out that way. Here's the scenarios. Here's what we're going to do. We've got some knobs and some dials to pull back. We're going to take some proactive things. We asked the group to take some cuts in terms of benefits, in terms of like saving for retirements and things like that. And everybody did that with it. I never heard a complaint, by the way. And I actually read it as like, everybody was not excited to do that. Nobody wants to give up a benefit, but everybody felt like they were contributing. And we just talked about it. What kinds of things can we do during this? Like, we all have a lot of energy to work. One of the weirdest things about that time, if you remember and you put yourself back there, is the nature of our work is usually schedules and trips and meetings and things like that. Everybody else was disrupted, which disrupted all of those meetings, which actually put us in a position where like, I felt like I'm ready to work and I wasn't sure what to do. Like, I feel like I should be doing a bunch of things, but I'm not sure what to do. So our whole team talked about that. Like, we've actually got a lot of time right now. So what are people needing right now? And so we created a long list of people who not only do we work with now, but people we've ever worked with in the past. And we divided it up amongst our team. And we just started calling people and seeing like, what do you need? What problems are you trying to solve? And then we would take those problems and we came back and we started creating tools for people to use and started working as a team together. My point of all of this story was that I think that what worked really well in that scenario was that I took a step back. And first of all, I met everybody where they were on our team. Where are you at? Okay, you're at home. You're frustrated because you can't get out. You're frustrated because the kids are there. You don't have the keyboard you need. Let's start with that. Then we cast a common vision together about where we needed to go. And then we started taking those steps together as a team. And I think that worked really well. Like, we ended up pretty quickly getting back that 30%. All those clients came back over time. Just like everybody, the year ended up not as good as other years from that standpoint. Our team responded really, really well in terms of helping other people. Some of that we got paid for, some of that we didn't get paid for, but that wasn't the point. Our team felt like we had purpose. I thought we did a really good job. And I heard from people on the outside saying, man, you guys were one of the leaders during that event, like in our communities, of saying, you guys, your team helped us through that. And I think it was because we started with ourselves first and we met each other where we were and then built out from there. So that's the topic that we want to lay out, is if you're trying to think, how can you be influential with your team? How can we, it starts by meeting people where they are, which is easier said than done.
You know, and one of the things that you just talked about, Don, you were preparing to talk to us as a team. And this is, I think we should probably point out, maybe people have COVID fatigue, and sorry, we're going back to that space again. Like, I thought we were done with that. Let's go forward. But I think it's a good illustration of people were in a frenzy. How do we get out of the frenzy? You know, people are reading this differently. How do we start making progress forward? Or maybe you're just in a situation now where it feels like it gets stale. Like, work has gotten stale. It feels like we just now show up and go to work. We've lost the visionary stuff. We lost the strategic stuff. We're moving at different paces depending on the people. We're just not together. Something's out of sync. And maybe this is now the step that you need to do to be able to take that first step in sync, is recognize where people are, what's kind of gotten off, and then how do we go forward? But something that you said there too is, I recognize I had to meet them where they are. And I don't think that's something that we should maybe glaze over, because clearly if you came to the realization of, I had to meet them where they are, you also have went down the road of, what if I don't meet them where they are and I just pick it up? And I think you kind of glazed over that. But what's the detriment maybe of not doing that? Like, what if you would have just given the pull ourselves up by the bootstraps kind of talk and motivated him around? Maybe you play like We Are the Champions by Queen, and then you come in through a, you know, this, you know, through a double door smoke screen, or I don't know, something like that. Like, I would have slow clapped, but I don't know if that was the thing that would have gotten everybody moving in the same direction, right? So maybe don't glaze over that part. Why is it super important to be able to recognize that and start where we are? And I say that too, because I said a tongue in cheek earlier, but it's kind of true. Like, dang it, this is America. Why do I have to meet you where you are? Why can't you bring yourself up to where I am? Which is how you're reading that, you know, for some of our folks, that's how they're reading that anyway. Why are you low and I'm high? Why do I have to go low? Why can't you come up to my level to do this? But there's definite reasons of why we have to meet people where they are. And there's definite consequences if I don't.
Yeah, we often talk about the idea of the engineering and the science, right? The science is how people work, and that's how we're hardwired, and that's really important. And then the engineering is how do you apply that science, right? The science is really well understood in this area. The engineering is you have to meet people where they are, otherwise they're not going to follow you. You meet people not because you want that to do it that way. It's because that's the best way to do it. I think about back when I was in college, I was in a fraternity, Diana. I don't know if you knew that. It's a social fraternity called Triangle Fraternity at University of Nebraska.
Don't vote me into this conversation. It was a nerd fraternity, and that's all I'm going to say.
We have chapters all over the country who might disagree with you, but I'm just saying.
I love the nerds. I love the nerd. It's fine. Just
were you going to make a triangle? Did you just try to do this? We didn't have a hand signal. Like, yeah.
Well, you should have. Triangle Fraternity.
That's not how that.
By our powers combined.
No.
I don't know.
So you did. You said don't lead me into it, but then you went into it anyway.
I can't help it.
I just met Diana where she was and probably empowered her too much, frankly. So we're going to dial that one back. I had this idea. I was the, I don't remember what office position I had at that time in the fraternity, but I had some office position. I had this great idea. I was a whiteboarder back then too. And I was like, you know what we should do? And I went to a house meeting and I said, hey, everybody, great news. Here's what we're going to do. We are going to beat the world record for the largest twister tournament. And told everybody, I'm like, this is going to be great. We got all the boards. We got all the games. We're going to get all the people. This is going to be great. And I've got assignments for each of you already written out. And I handed it out to everybody. I said, you're going to go get 2,000 people. You call the football, you know, Memorial Stadium and see if we can talk to the athletic director, see if we can get on the stadium to do this. You go to do this. You go do this. You go do this. And you go find sponsors for this thing. And we're going to do this. And I laid this whole thing out for the team. And and guess what happened?
You accomplished your goal.
No.
Oh.
That's why you see me on the cover of the Guinness Book of World Records.
Right.
Just in a little knot. Yeah. No, nothing. Nobody. I mean, not only did some people not do their job, nobody did their job. Like, no one did anything. And I remember being so frustrated because it was like, the foolish first step I took, and this is a true story. You guys haven't heard this, was secured the Twister mats. That was the first step I took. Is I got, I think it's Hasbro, boy, risky a little bit, but I think it's Hasbro with Twister, actually sent us enough Twister mats to do. I had in my room like 3,000 Twister mats, some ridiculous. And then, like, that was the first thing I did was collected the twist, got the Twister mats in place, saying, hey, we're going to try to break this world record. And they're like, great. We'll send this to you. That was the first thing I did. And so then the second thing I did was told a whole bunch of people about it that we're going to be doing this, but not the people who are going to be doing this with me. So there's high expectations. Everybody's really excited about it. Twisters on board, like Hasbro people have like sent all these mats, and it just project crashed and burned. And I remember standing in front of everybody in the fraternity meeting, just going like, you guys disappointed me. You guys let me down. You left me out there. I can't believe you guys did this.
My new favorite story.
You're a bunch of failures, right? Like, but I think that's like, Matt, your question was like, what happens if you don't meet people where they are?
Yeah, we can outpace the team. By the way, it is Hasbro. Shout out to our friends at Hasbro. It is Hasbro. I Googled that to save that moment there. But We can outpace the team. Sometimes you as a leader can outpace, you can outpace the team. And most of the time, I think when we do that, like Don's story there, I think most of the time when we do that, we do it accidentally or involuntarily. We're not trying to leave people in the dust. We're hoping at the end of the day, they accomplish the great things that I think we can accomplish. A lot of times for leaders or for whatever department heads or managers or business owners, you might be five steps ahead in your mind because you've been strategically thinking about this the entire time. So you might even say, you might turn around and give them step three and, anticipate that they already knew what steps one and two were, but they didn't. And so what you've done is accidentally outpaced the team, which is going to lead to frustration and probably some sort of a failed project. And so meeting them where they are, let's just kind of frame that a little bit. You know, I can meet them where they are with direction. I can meet them where they are with emotion. Right. I can meet them where they are with, you know, physically, we do an activity. I don't want to give it away, but we do an activity. And the kicker to the activity is I start by meeting the volunteer wherever they are on stage with me. Because if I want them to move forward, I've got to start with where they are. And sometimes for our folks, for some of the folks, it's, you know, I mentioned emotionally, sometimes I have to meet them there emotionally. And this is your, for those of you that are listening going, ugh, emotionally, why do emotions even have to be part of work, Diana? You know what I'm saying? Like it might be one of those situations as a manager that you're feeling that, but again, the goal is not that they feel great. The goal is not that they're happy. The goal is getting them engaged and moving forward towards the great, you know, great and wonderful things that you think they can help us accomplish. But in order to get to that point, I've got to start by relating to them, maybe emotionally, maybe physically, maybe in my posture, maybe in my stance, maybe in the words that I use. There's a whole lot to this idea of meeting somebody where they are. It is not that you are lowering yourself to their standard. It's that you are trying to do your best. And you might even say, to be able to create buy-in. How do I create buy-in? You might be a manager going, how do I create buy-in with this wonderful team? I have a talented group of people. I've seen them do great stuff. But it seems like everything has to be my idea, or it seems like everything, you know, I come across as kind of a dictator whenever I'm saying we need to do these things and I don't want to lead that way. How do I create buy-in with the team? And part of that is less of you and more of them, which might be hard for you to hear. Less of you and more of them. Create the space, meet them where they are emotionally, whatever that looks like, at their work level, their knowledge base, meet them where they are. And then, okay, now that we create a common foundation, then how do I now take the steps to move forward? I just kind of wanted to frame what that looked like too.
I like that. And I think it's not just, you know, so far the examples we've used are big and grandiose of I'm going to lead a company through a pandemic, or I'm going to implement this plan or something like that. But this happens on a lot smaller scale too. Diana, I was thinking about in your past life, you taught little kids, right? Didn't you teach kindergarten for a little bit?
It was 2 and 3 year olds. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then also high school. So like,
same difference.
What's the difference? Just, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
taller.
They were taller.
Diana, this actually, I'm glad that Don did that, but Diana, this actually reminds me of a conversation you and I had. Our 3-year-old nephew is staying with us, and you know, the 3-year-old nephew got into the van with us whenever we were bringing him home with us, and his mom's like, oh, he can't buckle that. He can't buckle a seat. And we're like, no, leave him alone. Watch him. He does it with us all the time. Beckham, get in there and buckle your buckle. And he starts reaching around and grabbing the straps and starts working on the buckle. And his mom's like, he never even tries that with me. Well, there's a reason for that. And then Diana, you and I were talking about that. And you were like, man, I've seen those kids do more things than their parents ever thought they could. And part of the reason I don't want to put words in your mouth, but part of the reason I would venture to say is you created the space to let them do it, but you kind of related to them on, you know, met them where they were and then created the space to let them do that too.
Yeah. I mean, I had so many parents come to pick up their kids and be like, okay, let's go. And I was like, wait a minute, Susie, you got to clean up your puzzle before you go, and you got to put it right in the right bin, and you got to pick it up the right way. And their parents would be like, Susie doesn't do that. Like, that's not a thing. And I'd be like, oh, she does it all day, every day here at school. So she could definitely do it at home. But it's because I modeled the behavior. I physically crouched down on the floor, taught them how to do it, showed them, walked beside them with them to go do it. And they quickly picked up on it. And they were like, this is what we do now, right? It was just, I was with them doing it, and it became an expectation.
Yeah. The crouching down is a really good example, because that is like a really good visual. Like if you're talking to a child And, you know, I'm 6'4" and I'm talking to a little kid or something and I'm standing up talking down to them. I'm not meeting them where they are physically. Like everybody knows, I think instinctively, that if you want to talk to a little kid, if you get down to their level and you're talking with them, then suddenly they're like, okay. And they respond better to that. Like we see that. That's very hardwired into us. Or the flip side of that, you get that aunt that's too excited, like at the family reunion, who sees the little kid and the little kid comes up and they're like, the kid's like a little shy and a little scared. And the aunt goes over the top with it and is like, oh, I can't believe you're here. This is amazing. You're so awesome. And, oh, you're so cute. You want to come talk to me? Da, 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 da. It's like, no. And the kid is just like, nope, I'm not going near them. The kids tend to gravitate towards the people who are a little more aloof. Like if they're scared, then they gravitate towards people who are a little more aloof.
Yeah.
Or who pick up on something that, hey, you brought your baseball glove. Are you into baseball? You know, or hey, I like your shirt. Is that, you know, da da da. You pick up something that meets them where they are, and then the kids are more likely to connect with you. We don't lose that as adults.
Yeah. No, and actually I was going to parlay that into a little bit of adult learning theory too. You know, we talk a little bit about adult learning theory and, you know, how do I do this with, you know, might be sitting there going, I don't work with children. I work with adults. How is that relevant? It's super relevant. There's an adult learning theory principle that talks about how do I encourage employees to relate maybe the past experiences and the knowledge they have from previous jobs, from previous roles that they've played into their success in the new role that they're in. And you can do this from the beginning of, and I would encourage it from onboarding and orientation. And I'm training somebody, a new person in a new role. How do I meet them where they are? Part of that is recognizing that just because they've never worked there does not mean they're not bringing anything to the table, right? Just because they've never been in your building doesn't mean they don't know some stuff. And so how do I meet them where they are and go, hey, in your past role, it said that you used to do this in your past role, and it looks like you excelled at that. We do something similar to that too. How do we think we can maybe translate what you did into being awesome in what we do? And then help them walk down that road. But again, you're starting from where they are instead of just going, hey, forget everything you've learned before. They had it wrong. This is what we do and how we do it. Now you're starting to outpace those people again, and it's going to lead to failure.
Yeah. It's amazing how that stuff works so well. Like even I'm reminded of an episode of The Office where an Andy first is introduced and he comes in and they said, I'm going to move up really fast. And they're like, how are you going to do that? And he's like, by mirroring and people's activities. So Michael Scott comes out, you know, hello, Mr. And then he repeats it back, like says it almost exactly back. And like later in the episode, Michael's like, I really like that Andy guy. Like he is really connecting with me. But I mean, you think about it on a day-to-day conversation, it doesn't have to be totally fake. You don't have to totally fake it. But if somebody comes in really low key and they're talking to you like this, and it's the first time you're meeting with them, it makes total sense to just lower your voice a little bit. You don't have to mimic. Just take it down a notch. Sometimes I've seen leaders who go the other direction, and we are just like we're hardwired to respond to somebody that meets us where we are. We are maybe even more hardwired to resist somebody who doesn't. So somebody comes in and it's like, okay, I just want to take it down a notch. And like, here's what we're doing, everybody. This is, I'm so glad to meet you. And you're going to give me some energy. Here's what we're going to do. And you see the person just like, nope, I'm not going to talk with you. We even do that with audiences. Like, I think a lot of times people say, like, how do you engage with a whole audience of people? Well, you have to start by acknowledging the situation that you're in. I have spoken at, I can remember I was invited to speak at the Women in Publishing Association on how to negotiate, on negotiation. I was given a presentation on how to, and I went to the conference fully aware that that was an interesting case to be in, that they invited a male speaker at the Women in Publishing event to speak on negotiation. But then it really became apparent in the room, as I'm the only male in this room of 100 people. Like I'm the only one in there, and I'm sitting in the back, and people are looking, like, or looking around. And you see people flipping through their books, and like every once in a while they point to each other, like, "Oh, there it is, right there. It's a speaker." And it's on. It's, and side note, like a little bit of tone deafness to also bring in a male to talk about negotiation. To like, that's not the best. Even if you're bringing in a topic, that's not a great topic to come into. So I'm just reading the room, and I'm recognizing like skepticism. Like skepticism, not sure why you're here. Are you going to come in and mansplain this thing to us? What's that going to look like? And I went up to the microphone and I looked around. They introduced me and I went up to the microphone and I was kind of quiet. And I just looked out at all these skeptical faces just looking at me. And I just looked out of the room. I just looked out of the group and I said, okay, elephant in the room. And the whole room erupted laughing. Like, just all I said was elephant in the room. And everybody started laughing and started putting this out. And so then I've started laughing too. And so now we're communicating, we're talking with you. And so suddenly then the presentation went fine. Like, it's those moments. Or like, if we have, if there's AV problems or something that's out there, like the microphone, the worst thing you can do. And like, we've had lots of problems with that over the years, like the screen goes out or the microphone's going in or out or something like that. And I've seen so many speakers like totally ignore it. And you don't want to totally ignore it. Like, you can't pretend like it's not happening. You have to go to the audience and say, like, I know my microphone's going in and out right now. We're going to try to get that fixed, but let's go here and we're going to talk about here. And what if I did this? Would this work out better for you? Or we don't have this. And while we try to get this back, I'm going to switch directions here and we're going to talk about this. And then everybody feels like, well, at least we're all in it together. And because we're all in it together, then where we go, we're doing it together, right? So let's talk about that a little bit. We've talked about meeting people where they are, but once you meet people where they are, then can you take them someplace where they wouldn't normally go on their own?
You know, I think, you know, the thing that you just talked about there too, is sometimes the best thing to do is to lean into it. Even if, you know, even if it's the awkward, sometimes we might see somebody and see a situation where like, oh, they probably don't want to talk about it. Let me distract them or change their mind or, you know, change their thought process. But no, the best thing you could do is to lean into it. And then once we, again, what you're trying to do by meeting them where they are, to avoid the cliche, what I'm trying to accomplish there is I'm trying to find the same starting point that we can both move forward. That's what that means. That's what the whole idea of meeting them where they are means. I'm trying to find the most common ground for us to be able to get on the same page. What's the first thing that we can potentially agree on? And then that away, once I have that first yes, now I can start to build on the yeses and build on the movement forward, because we're starting at the same place. If I haven't reached the point to where we're both on the same yes, right? We're both thinking the same way. Then again, I'm going to start outpacing. One of us is going to start outpacing the other of us, right? And might not always be you. Maybe you're the one left behind. And so meeting them where they are, I'm trying to find the common ground. So then we can now add like building blocks. And I joke with people a lot whenever I'm on stage doing this, finding the common ground. It might be all the way back to, we both agree that we both work here, right? The same company pays us both to work here and make decisions. Can we agree on that? Yes. Great. We have common ground. I've met them where they are. Here we go. And now how do we want to move forward together? I don't want to leave you, and maybe I'll verbalize it too. I don't want to outpace you. I don't want you to outpace me. We're both trying to accomplish these wonderful things together. And I think that's maybe a next best step, is once we have the common ground, now we need to cast a vision, set a direction, and then how do we start moving together, moving forward together?
Yeah. Once you've cast that vision, you can start to challenge both of you to move in a different direction. I was thinking of an example. I'm going to be really vague just to protect the innocent on here, but I was in a different organization and they had let somebody go. And that person was really frustrated and was thinking probably about fighting the organization. And I went and met with that person and sat down with her and said, hey, we sat down and she was ready to fight. Like, she was sitting down like, okay, this is the things you're going to do. These are things, my list of demands and everything. And I said, hey, can we just start by like, how are you? Like what's going on? And she said, oh, I'm terrible. Like, I just lost my job and I'm really scared about the next part and all that. Da, da, da. And I just said, yeah. And none of us expected for that to happen. We didn't expect that to happen. You didn't expect that to happen. And she sat back and you could just see like the air went out of her. And she's like, you're absolutely right. Like, I didn't expect that to happen. You didn't expect that to happen. None of us wanted that. This stinks. And then she finally leaned in. She's like, so now what do we need to do moving forward? And then it was a discussion, and then you just kind of take a step, right? And then you kind of wait and say like, well, what if we did this? And then you lay it out and then you wait and see if they take some steps with you. That's a really good way to build trust over time, is you are not just meeting people where they are. Because I go back to what you said, Matt, about like, some manager listening to this going like, if I meet everybody where they are, that means they're lazy and stupid and I'm waiting for them to do everything, right? That's not what we're talking about in terms of, you can still lead the team, but you have to start by meeting folks where they are.
Yeah, especially if my job as manager is to build the most dynamic team that I can to accomplish the wonderful goals that the organization has laid out. I need a great team of people to help me do that. That does not happen unless you can start at a place where we are working on this together. We're all focused on, you know, I'll use us as an example. I mean, we have many different pieces that go into making people-centric successful, right? But we all have an idea of what success looks like. And so we're coming at it from different places, but we all have an idea of what success looks like. If we did not, if we were gauging success, you know, completely differently, or if you guys weren't as transparent as you are with us, with, you know, Don and Diana, that as far as what winning potentially looks like for the organization, then you might have, and this might be a lot of other people. Maybe they're not doing anything wrong. Maybe your team's not doing anything wrong. Maybe they're doing lots of wonderful things, but none of those wonderful things are aligned and helping us achieve the stuff, right? Maybe it's not that they're sabotaging it. They're working their tails off, but they're all going left and the company's trying to go right. But maybe that's not their fault either. Maybe now is the time that you need to step back and meet them where they are and understand, hey, why are we doing these things? Why are you focused so much on this? Why are you, you know, prioritizing your day like this? Let's just help identify, you know, for each other, maybe what success looks like. I want to portray what success looks like as far as I'm concerned, but I also want to hear from you. How are you gauging success for you? And then let's align those thoughts and then be awesome together. I think that's, just, you know, maybe just another example of what that looks like too.
Yeah. So this has been a really good discussion. Great topic on here. Diana, what are some of your thoughts or takeaways from the discussion or tips for the listeners or watchers on YouTube?
Yeah. I mean, I love the discussion. I think it is hard to meet people where they are. I think that's like such a cliche. And now it's turned into this, like, what are you talking about moment where you don't know what to do. And I love that you guys have said, just be real, like be real with people. Find the common ground and ask questions. Be curious. Like, don't go into it guns blazing and trying to get your point across. You have to really, really intentionally want to see their point too, and really intentionally want to see them also. And I think that's, I don't know. I think it's hard to do, but I think it's really cool when it happens.
Yeah. I think that's great tips. If you're thinking about like, how do you systematize that? That means we always talk about like quarterly check-ins with employees, and people say, well, what do we talk about? You need to find out where your people are. If you don't know where they're at, that's what you should use those for. Where are you at? Where's your head at? Tell me what's going on. Like, how do you feel? And it may have something to do with work. It may not have anything to do with work, but if their mind's not in work and their mind is in something else, it also behooves you as an employer to also kind of understand that, you know, within some boundaries, to at least know, even if you don't know the details of all the stuff. And that's not what we're saying, is like become a detailed part of all the employees' lives, invite yourself to dinner, all those things. We're just saying acknowledge the moment of like, hey, you might be really distracted right now with some things that are happening personally, and I don't understand what all those things are, but I see that that's hurting you right now, and I'm sorry. And that's all it takes sometimes in those moments. Or I see it seems like you're really excited and you want more. Like, tell me more about what that looks like. It's asking the questions, being curious. I think that's really, really great. So, all right. Matt, any final words here for our final words? Sounds so final. Like, Matt, what are your last words you'll ever say to this audience?
Closing remarks.
It feels like, I'll wrap it up here. It feels like, like you had just talked about, for some people, they might need to hear this. You don't have to be happy because they're happy. You don't have to be sad when they're sad, but you do need to recognize that they do in fact feel that way. Right. That's that first step, maybe to kind of starting to align commonalities there, trying to find that common ground. So I don't have to feel the same way. I don't have to act the same way, but I just need to recognize that's where they are, and do my best to try to relate to that. I will also say this. We don't have to do that forever. I don't want to open up another topic here, but we don't have to do that forever. You know, part of our job is to be able to help get them aligned. Let's find some common ground. Let's get us moving in the right direction. And if we have tried that over and over again, it might just be a bad fit and it's time to move on to something different. So there is a time and a place for that too. So we're not saying it's always sunshines and rainbows, right? There might come a time to where we just need to agree to disagree and part ways. We're clearly misaligned here. We can't get on the same page, but we have tried our best and it's not worked out that way, but do your best, put your best foot forward first, maybe find some people around you and start that conversation. See if you're already aligned, but do your best to try to meet somebody else where they are this week, whether it's a peer, whether it's your employee, whether it's your boss. Maybe you can ask some of those questions too. So hope you enjoyed this topic and feel free to share and give us feedback on other topics if you'd like to hear that too. And until next time, hope you guys have a great rest of your day. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the People-Centered Podcast. We are so grateful for you joining us every week. If you like this content, please like and subscribe. Also, feel free to share on your social media with everyone that you know. It really does help us. If you would like to contact us, I have put our information in the show notes. Please reach out anytime. We love hearing from you. We will be back next week with a new topic. Until then, be well and lead.